Welcome, everyone. Can you hear me? Thank you so much for coming out today. It means a lot to us that you made the effort. I know sometimes they put up like an obstacle course on I-10 and every airport surrounding Tucson when you're coming to Diamond Mountain. So I don't know if you lost your luggage or you were late. Maybe it takes a lot of kelwa to come to Diamond Mountain. So thank you for the effort. I want to start by just thanking a few people. I'm going to be brief. Thank you, Geshe Michael, for this retreat and for the teachings, and for giving us this opportunity and a reason to do retreat, for taking care of us, and coming and sitting with us one-on-one. This is a blessing. Thank you. I'd like to thank Lama Christy for her vision of this place and all of the love that she gave me and us. I'd like to thank Lamas Pelma and Trisama and Orla and Isabella. They've been guiding me for a very long time and throughout the whole retreat. To thank all the caretakers. And all of the sponsors and volunteers and people who built this place and all of our friends who have sacrificed so much for us. Thank you. I don't know if you can see it in the caretakers. We're lucky enough when Holy Lama comes to see a few of their faces, and they're glowing. I don't know if you can see it, but when I see them, I think, I want that. So thank you. Thank you. To thank all the retreatants for inspiring me, putting on my blindfold, giving me a drink of water. They're incredible at taking care of people and generous. I'd like to thank 8 parents and my 2 sisters. Thank my mom and Larry and my dad and Ellen and my sisters Julia and Maya. I'd like to thank Will Duncan's parents, Bill and Peggy, and Barb and Chuck. Barb and Chuck were here the night that we came into 3 Retreat after working on cabins all day. All 10 of those people directly helped build Diamond Mountain, mostly with their own hands. And it was the day we came in. We were right out here on the flagstones, and there was a snowstorm. And we were all bundled up, and Barb and Chuck we're standing there, and we wave goodbye. You don't know if you'll ever see your family or friends again. And we got about 10 feet away, and Chuck called out to Will and I, "Just take care of each other." I was going, "Oh." I said, "Okay." And it struck me, because that's been the main daily practice, is just take care of each other. So I'd like to thank Will for taking care of me and being my best friend on this journey. His practice is a constant source of inspiration to me every day. He's up the hill today, but he's very well. I'll talk about him a lot, probably because he can't say anything. So, just so you know who he is. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous. And I'm a little tired. We can't really sleep when you come. It's true. And I spent most of the day today cleaning my room. And don't take it lightly. I can tell you from experience that the one day that you don't clean your room, a holy lama, after 2.5 years of not seeing them, and that they hadn't ever been to your house, they'll show up the day that your yoga underwear is drying on the curtain rod. So it may sound like a simple practice, but please take it seriously, because that's true. So I was thinking about three retreat and talking to you, and I was thinking that it's very similar to a yoga class, except it's just the longest yoga class you've ever been to, for sure. Even if you've been to Holy Kendra Lhasa class. So I was thinking about it because it has the components. You have to set your motivation. Then you have to actually get your mind there. Your body can be at yoga, but your mind is deciding what kind of pancakes to make, or that you're going to make Will make. And then your teachers start throwing all these unexpected poses at you and difficult poses. And then there's final relaxation pose, Shavasana. And retreat has all those components, and I'll explain why and how. And your teachers are with you the whole way. And I don't know if you... I've never regretted going to a yoga class. I've never regretted doing my practice. I've never regretted meditating or being kind to someone. I mean, do you ever regret that? Do you ever wake up or in the afternoon, you're like, that ruined my day, you know? I shouldn't have thought of others in the morning, and I shouldn't have done my yoga to open my heart. We don't think that. And retreat is like that. I hope you come. So, so to start with motivation, this will just be some personal stuff. About 11 years ago, on Thanksgiving, I was at a quiet retreat teaching. And I heard Geshe Michael speak from his three-year retreat. And he said, big compassion, maha karuna, that you will take away the pain of every living being on this planet and every other planet, and you will do that. And he taught the practice of Tonglen, and he taught why it was possible to do that. And I felt like I came home. So I thought, I want to do 3-year retreat. I had never been to a Buddhist teaching, formal teaching. My teachers taught me. But I had never been to a Buddhist teaching. And I thought, I want, and it was just a want, you know, just like, I want that. It didn't really have a strong motivation behind it or intention. So I noticed right away by doing the practice of Tonglen that there was a relationship between the sitting practice and my life. And they were like two sides of a coin. So time went on, and then about 3 years before this 3-year retreat, I was at a Mexican restaurant in Tucson, and I was sitting having a really nice meal with my sister Julia and my mom, and 3-year retreat came up, and they said, this is a very selfish idea. So what did I do? I ordered more chips and prayed that the waiter would come quicker and bring the rest of our meal. So I didn't respond. But these are two of the most unselfish people I have ever known. They're always taking care of each other and everyone. They're both nurses. 2 years later, they were out here. My sister was mixing mud for adobe floors with Matt Gallup, and my mom was teaching me how to use a caulk gun. And so I listened to what they said because they are a reflection of me, and I wanted my motivation to get a little cleaner. I wanted my intention to be pure. So I ignored them and thought about it every day. And it was really the suffering, my own suffering, and the suffering of those around me that were leading me to come into retreat. And what did it look like? Well, I was a physician assistant, and I worked in mental health for about 7 years in Tucson. And some mornings, for a couple of years in the morning around 5 or 6 a.m., I would go in and work for an hour or two at a methadone clinic right next door to my clinic, not my house. And I would see the new admissions. And one morning, a young girl came in, about 18 or 19. She'd graduated high school. And you know, I would do a physical exam and draw some blood and ask a lot of questions. And she didn't seem like she was using heroin. There's signs I can spare you, but needle marks and things. And I said, what do you want? What can I do? She said, I'm snorting and smoking heroin and I can't stop. I can't stop. And there was a deep, there was a deep sadness in her, but also a deep hope, a deep longing. So time went on, and I didn't see her. She would be seen by someone else after that. And about a year or two later, I came into my regular office in the morning, and one of my dear friends, nurse practitioner, said, "Anne, do you remember Jennifer?" That's not a real name. I said, "Of course. I loved her." She said, "Well, her grandmother called this morning, and they found her in a parking lot, dead, and she overdosed, likely." And I didn't know how to love her anymore. And the rest of my day, this was before I put my bag down. I just walked down to my office, and there was a stack of charts. Well, usually, this was before the electronic medical record, it would be falling over with people who didn't want to suffer and just wanted to be happy and just wanted to stop I think we all want to stop, you know, whether it's jealousy or anger or resentment, alcohol, harmful desire. We all want to stop. And so I just thought, can I maybe do something a little bit different? So I came into retreat not to move away from anyone, but to move closer to the causes of the suffering in my own heart. So I get into retreat, and what does it look like? Just to keep your motivation, you know? It's everyday intention. And one of the beautiful, powerful practices that's helpful for me is that I learned from Geshe-la is just to dedicate each day to one person. If I dreamt about them, or if I remember it's their birthday. It's Chuck's birthday today, Will's stepdad. So it's such a relief all day to have that. It's a blessing. I suggest maybe trying it. I'm not here to teach, though. I'm just here to talk. So that's a nice way, a daily thing. Then, what happens when my motivation slips? Well, I'll tell you. One day I was meditating, and most of these stories are probably from the first year. It's about how caught up I am in my mind. I was meditating one day, and I was suddenly doing an analytical meditation on whether or not it was safe to feed raw quinoa to birds, and whether or not I should take up this practice, because I don't feed the birds for a number of reasons. I give them water. And I was thinking, who can I write a note to in the East Valley. Maybe I was in the East Village too. But I was thinking, who could I ask? And suddenly I was like, what am I doing? And I traced the steps back to the object of meditation, and something about how clear the steps were and how mundane my mind felt and how I felt this years of life or lifetimes of failure hit me too hard, and I just burst out into tears, and I couldn't, it was a breakdown. So there's lots of kinds of crying, but this was just like a total breakdown. So I, like the same thing happened last night when I saw your faces on the screen. So I decided to get up, and it's beautiful here. I walked up the hill and back. It's just about a 10-minute walk. And this just, if you look at page 143, I don't have any video, but if you look at page 143 in your book, you can look later. I don't. That's the view I see every day, and the horizon will heal you. So I walked up the hill, and I got to the top of the hill, and I looked down on the ground, and I saw a toothbrush, and I was like, I did what any normal person who had been in isolation for a long time. I picked it up to examine it, and it was the oldest, rattiest toothbrush I'd ever seen. The bristles were, it had never been a nice toothbrushes. I didn't think they made cheap toothbrushes, but the bristles were like Brillo. And this is not Connie's toothbrush. So I turned it over, and someone had carved their name in the handle. And I thought, Who would claim this thing? You wouldn't even brush your teeth with it, ever. And who would claim it? They must have had nothing. And my mind just sort of went to a story, thinking about, you know, there's many, many Mexicans who walk for days and days and days right near the border. And with nothing. And maybe this was their only possession. And I was still crying, and I was still, but now I had this boy in my heart who probably had nothing. And I walked back down the hill holding it like a staff, and here I am, my brown rice, mung bean, organic vegetable, khichdi is cooking in the sun, I've been waiting for me. And I have all these teachings. My motivation slipped. I forgot who all sentient beings were. You know, that boy, Liam, was all sentient beings. Just one. And so, I went back, and you know, when I'm in that space of failure, I'm just grasping so hard to the self-existent me. And if I'm in a space of openness, which seems to come from the motivation, then I can see, then I can examine that the only situation that exists is the one I created with my deeds in the past. But I can't think about that if I'm just thinking about me. I don't know. So that's a little bit about motivation. Now going back to the yoga example, you know, you're in yoga class and you've arrived, and but you got to get there, and it's good to have a plan. I'm big on schedules and plans. And so in this 3-year retreat, I've been doing Master Iyengar's 5-year yoga series, and we're on about week 133, and I don't get excited. No one's laughing, so I know that there nobody knows what 133 is, except these guys. There's a drop back into Urdhva Dhanurasana, full back bend, go into handstand, and then go into forward bend, and do it 15 times. Master Iyengar says you can spread it out through the day, and if you're over 35, it may take longer to master. And so I can't do that. So I just modify, but... I was having this problem when I started the first year. I was trying to think the whole time on the mat and the whole time on the cushion in meditation. I was trying to think. I was trying to keep my mind on Tonglen and the whole time. And I was just tight. Finally, two of my lamas said, "Why don't you just do the yoga?" And I was like, "Oh, okay. Why not just be with the pose?" So I wrote on my, in front of my mat, "Be with the pose." And then I was asking Lama Palma. She's been so generous, guiding me, for lots of advice on sadhana and prayers. Finally, she said, "Just let the practice reveal itself to you." Like, be quiet, Annie. Just be with the practice. Mother Teresa says, our prayer life suffers so much because our hearts aren't silent. So I thought, does that apply to my life? And I recalled a time, I was about 22, I was living in San Francisco volunteering for an AIDS organization. And we got trained in active listening skills. And I got paired up with a man suffering from AIDS and multiple sclerosis, MS. And I went to his apartment on Sundays with an agenda. I was going to help him clean his apartment. I was going to practice my active listening skills because he was alone and everyone had deserted him. People just desert people who are sick or smell or are grumpy. And he wanted to watch musicals together because he loved them. So we would sit on the couch and I would pet his cat and we would watch musicals because he didn't want to enjoy them alone. He wanted to enjoy them with someone else. And then I would leave and I would walk up Haight Street and I think, darn, I didn't get to practice my active listening skills. You know? I mean, this is like, I really thought that. And it wasn't until now when I just reflected on it recently that I thought watching musicals was listening. You know, so can I drop my agenda? Can I still have a plan and a goal, but drop my agenda and be with the pose, be with the meditation, be with the prayers, be with the person who's suffering, be with a loved one? So going back to this yoga, you're in the yoga class. How is yoga today? It was the first day in probably, I'd say almost 3 years, that I was like, I think I'm just going to clean. Will showed up with Matt under his arm, put it down on the floor, and we did our practice. So then, your teachers start throwing out unexpected and difficult poses. And first you might be like, I resist a little, you know? I remember being in Meera Shani's class. She's a dear teacher and friend. And I would be in forward bend. And I would be looking out of the corner of my eye to see if she was going to come over and poke my thigh to see if I was engaging muscular energy. And I was in my mind. I wasn't like focusing on my intention. You know, the intention, the motivation to carry it through the class. I was focusing on, please don't come over. But what am I thinking? I'm in her class, you know? I mean, we're put yourself in front of your teacher. And then you look up and say, "Don't do that?" I mean, it's like so that's where we're at in this little these examples from retreat. And a lot of these unexpected things, teachings have come from animals. And more so than I would like sometimes, because I'm afraid of animals. I love them and I'm afraid of them. It's not always related to the size of the animal, because I'm pretty afraid of mice, which I can't. And I'm not really afraid of the bunnies. It's true. And even when they came and ate all of my flowers that I only have because Will replants them for me, after the bunnies eat them, he takes his 7-foot cosmos, and replants them in my garden when I'm not looking. And so that's the only reason I have flowers, because the bunnies eat them all. But anyway, I'm going to tell you about this one challenge. It was the end of a deep retreat in the winter, and I was finishing up a 6-week retreat the first winter. And I was doing, my last mantras and asking for blessings. And I like to imagine Alejandro and Will playing the rain drum. And you're keeping yourself open to any sort of messages or signs or guidance. It's a really important time to listen. And I got a in the floor, like right under my cushion, and then and then it smelled like a skunk, and turned out it was a skunk, so. Well, I'll tell you about their habits. They're nocturnal, pretty much. They also like sunrise and sunset. They what else do they do? They smell. And I was on the floor, and I was like, I wasn't very happy at the time. It had been a really difficult retreat, and but there was a tiny part of my mind, like this big, that was holding out that maybe this was, I should, it's an auspicious time. So break came, and I asked for help. It's a constant practice in retreat every day on the cushion, mostly to ask for help. But on break, I wrote a couple of notes to ask for help. And I wrote Venerable Cat, because she's our local animal guru. And I wrote Reverend Will, and for some help. Venerable Cat, she said, "No problem. Come get a trap. The skunk was getting in under the bathroom. When the skunk was outside, trap the skunk. If you get sprayed, just take a bath in tomato juice. And and by the way, she was like, I went to get the trap. And then she's like, wait, by the way, so skunks have to do with sexual energy and fearlessness and power, reputation. Okay. And then Reverend Will, I don't know why I'm calling him Ben. he said, "That's never going to work, but don't worry, I'll help you." And I was getting a little upset. And he said, "This is your object now." And I was like, okay. There was some relief in that. Because I wasn't resisting it anymore. So you want to know what happened? Time went on. It wasn't going to work because skunks are communal animals. And it turned out that there was two. Pepe and Will named Pepe. He names all the animals with boy names. And I named them with girl names. So I said, well, if there's two, it's Penelope. And I was hoping that they wouldn't, you know. After what? The cat. We built a little trap door where they were getting in and figured they'd just leave and not be able to get back in. Well, they just opened the door and went back in. And then we put a rock on the door with wire. And what did they do then? They just crawled under it to get back in. And then, we put a little concrete there, just a little concrete. And they crawled under the concrete. Then, we dug up the entire perimeter of the bathroom. Laid chicken wire, poured concrete, put all the dirt back, left the trap door, because you can't edit, I don't want to trap them in. And then we kept the door open, so when they came out around 6:30 at night, it was connected to a pulley that I stood on a ladder, and if the skunks came out, I would scare the one off a little bit. This was like a, let me just tell you, it takes a while to just recover from pouring the concrete, and then they wake up at 2 a.m., and during deep retreats, I get up at 3, so this was a long process. I actually had them for really months. Because it turned out there was five. And we counted them because we observed them in the evening. We took turns. It took about, 40 minutes to kind of get a count. But they all had to be out at the same time, so it was a major problem. So in a deep retreat, I rearranged my schedule so I would do my four session and then eat dinner after my four session so I could sit and watch them come out by the window. And I have an outdoor light. Thank you, Jarrett and Brooke. And Cochise County. I was like, I don't want an outdoor light. And thank you. Oh. So I could see them come out. So what did I do in the meantime? How did I... Because it's not a very pleasant situation. But how did I make it the object? And, on the cushion... They're not a good object for stillness. Because they also screech. And I thought they were fighting, and I thought I was having some violence seeds ripen too. But it turned out that they were just playing, because I witnessed it outside. They were cute. Don't be cute. I want to get rid of you. And I sat and I contemplated, have I come between anybody? Have I... what sexual misconduct have I committed in my life? And this wasn't a new contemplation for me. But in retreat, and I had actually done a retreat thinking about this before, three retreat, this karma, because bad smells can sometimes be related to sexual misconduct. So I thought, well, if I come between people, or have I just not helped someone who is lonely? And concentric circles, when you do your six times book. And I can always find something, I can't see my past lives for sure, but I don't need to go back that far. If you sit quiet, subtle ways, or subtle ways, this control idea that I maybe tried to manipulate situations for my own need or my own want, and you can find something. So I did that. And then while I was on the ladder, it was really cold out, and I would bundle all up, and my arm would get tired, so I'd put a rock on the pulley and wait. And I'd look up at the stars, and I'd think about my teachers, but I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't feeling like I'm going to succeed or help anyone. So I thought about people I thought of ways that maybe these karmas could have ripened, and what I may see around me, maybe broken relationships or even addictions, all sorts of things. And I pictured very specific people, and I was uncomfortable, so I just imagined while I was on the ladder that all of that, all of their seeds for those things that they had experienced were just dissolving into my own discomfort, and that was dissolving as well. And I just thought about all of those people while I stood up there. Because otherwise, I wouldn't have kept going. It would have been just, it already was too hard. So that's how I made it the object. Oh, gosh. Will said, if you don't conclude the story, people will feel uneasy. Finally, they all came out one night, all five, and I put a big rock on the door, and I ran inside, and they were gone. And I didn't hear anything. They were thumping in the floor under my cushion like this. And they were going, I smelled, you know. So they all came out and I shut the door, and I was so glad, because about the next day it was about 70 degrees, and I was so happy because then they wouldn't be cold, because I actually started to love them. I almost missed them. And that's just a illness. You miss. Be careful if you get rid of a mental affliction, or you don't totally get rid of it at my stage. But sometimes you miss them. It's just sick. But I was happy. It was warm. I was really relieved. It was warm. So that was 2 years ago. It's a little bit quieter now. So the second thing, second kind of challenge or unexpected thing, and I'll talk a little bit about, is more of an internal thing, more of an emotional thing maybe. And in relation to the yoga metaphor, which is really just the way I'm trying to remember what I'm talking about, feels like, to me, it's like a pranayama practice, a breathing practice, dealing with these internal things, because it takes a little bit of a gentler touch for me personally. Everyone's different in retreat with practices like pranayama. For example, if I do alternate nostril breathing, I don't cover my hand anymore. My nose. I don't cover my nose anymore because there's this like buildup of prana. You're already in a very intense place. You know, I don't have a computer. I don't have a cell phone. I'm not driving. I'm not talking. I don't really see anyone. There's no prana stealers. I'm trying to think of a good word for it, and I can't. They're like prana drainers. So you already have this buildup of energy. So it takes, for me, a little bit of a gentle touch. I do the practice, but I just, in a gentle way. And so some of these internal emotions sometimes, I think, take a gentle touch too. And one of them is missing someone or something or feeling lonely. So what does it look like in retreat? You know, what do I miss? I miss people the most. I don't really miss anything else when it comes down to it. Holy Lady Ruth, I don't know if she's here, but she's speaking tonight, and she came the first summer, I think it was the first summer in July, and she said, look, you're not missing anything. The world is spinning. That's what I heard her say. I don't directly quote people because I can't know that kind of memory, but that's what I heard. You know, the world is spinning. Just stay. She said, just stay. You don't miss, you miss people the most. What do I do when that happens? Usually happens when I'm doing the dishes. Because sometimes it's just like, I feel like I just meditate and then do dishes. And I meditate and I do dishes. And I miss my mom a lot. And what do I do? Well, I recognize, first of all, I'm not in the present moment. I'm in some like sort of sentimental daydreaming or some future fantasy. So I just recall that. And then I draw inspiration from all the people around me and all their courage. Just in the West Valley alone, there's about 11 cabins or so, and of all people in solitary retreat, and they're all women, except for Will. But his hair is long now, so I just count him in. I'm surprised you're laughing. This wasn't so funny, like in front of Holy Tonka in my room. So I draw strength in that kind of communion. And then there's still sometimes a visceral feeling at my heart or throat. And I just think about other people who are truly alone. Who are missing people, who are maybe in the same room with someone, and they're missing them. And I do the same thing I did on the ladder. I just take that and dissolve it into the visceral feeling that I'm left with. And I imagine that my own pain is being dissolved with their pain. So that's the missing. That's just if you're in a situation like that, that's just what I do. The other part is the loneliness. You can be alone and not be lonely, and you can be in a room full of people and feel alone. You know, maybe someone in this room feels alone. Maybe on the break you can find them. But it's a restlessness, it's an anxiety. I noticed it in the beginning of retreat. I kept walking over to the bookshelf, and it has a curtain on it, and it has books and notes and sheets and stuff. And I kept like walking over to it, and then I would get there and, what am I doing? You know, I didn't even open the curtain. I would stand there, and like I was looking for something. I just brought in this habit of like obsessive busyness. You know, texting and internet and gossip and whatever it is, like we try to fill that space with. And none of those things are bad. I mean, they're tools, you know, phone. But I would just stand there and I thought, I'm looking for something. There's nothing in there. There's nothing underneath that bookshelf. It's in here. It was a peculiar habit. I realized when I was thinking about this talk that it's faded away a lot. And sometimes I don't even realize that I'm feeling lonely. And then something will happen, like, I love peaches. And we only get them in the summer because they're seasonal on our order form. And the order form is, I hope they don't show you because you'll be so jealous. They give us a choice of what kind of apples to order. And for 3 years I've been writing any apples. And then after I saw that video, I was like, oh God. They're going to call me like any apple Annie. So the peaches are in the summer and they come. And the caretakers, this year they started wrapping them individually in towels so they don't get bruised. And then this year I opened them up and there was a smaller peach. It had dark skin. Don't get nervous. I'm fine. So this one is from the tree at Jamyang. And Jamyang is right across the road here. It's on the land. Normally the peaches come and I'm thinking about the 4 hours that it is just in the car to buy anything near here. And but this one from Jamyang, and I put it out, and I wanted to share it with someone. Every time something like that comes along, the peach, a sunset, or something beautiful, I want to share it. And then I realized maybe I am feeling a little lonely and the caretakers give us so much love. And try to sometimes, if you can, I just invite you sometimes to just pause and wait before the email or before the idle talk. I don't think I need to even say that in this room. But and just see what you're really longing for. Maybe longing to share, and you can in your mind. I just shared it. I ate the whole thing, but I shared it. You can share it like that. And so that's a bit about things that were a little bit difficult, sometimes very difficult. Now we've reached final relaxation pose. Maybe, let me just... So you just straighten out your spine and drop your shoulders. Relax your jaw. Found that sometimes I even hold tension in my hands sometimes. Relax your hands. So in my actual yoga practice, I use a lot of props. I have 3 blankets, a bolster, 2 blocks, a strap, a folding chair, and a bench. It's not really, it's like a little table. Yeah. I like props. Sometimes I can use all of those props at once. And but the majority of the poses, you don't use the props, you know? So what I'm going to tell you about for a total relaxation pose are just the props. Because mainly, the total relaxation pose is like letting go and gratitude and rejoicing. And mainly it's in meditation, and it will work on you in layers that... In deeper layers. But I'm just going to tell you about a few props for... Because it sounds like you only have time for props. Maybe. So busy. Oh, God. Thank you. So let me just tell you about a few. I'll try to make it quick. Although you're supposed to never do less than 10 minutes for Shavasana. So the first one is a couple of days a week after lunch, I watercolor. And it lets my mind be free without words. And I can offer and pray and relax my mind. And I'm not trying to get good at it, which is just a relief too. Yeah. And so I do that, or I'll sew a little bit, which is just repairing. All of our clothes are full of holes. I don't know why, but I'll just repair our clothes, and if they're irreparable, I'll just cut them up and make a new piece of clothing out of to. They're laughing because they see what I wear on the breaks. I'll make a new piece of clothing. It helps my mind relax. It's nice to have something without words. You know, sometimes it's nice. The second thing, you know, sometimes you have to let go first in order to do Shavasana. And I had to let go first of being really stubborn. I think I probably spent my whole childhood like this. I don't know. And I have this small kind of pride that Geshe Michael describes perfectly in ACI 13 when he's talking about debate. It's the kind of pride where you're too shy and too embarrassed that you don't know anything to take a risk. And what's the risk? The risk is learning something or opening your heart. So one of the things I can't do is I can't sing. It's not like my opinion. You know, people who can sing have told me, you know, you're correct. And so I won't, you know. But this year, Will and I, we have this beautiful trust between us. We've never spoken out loud to each other the entire retreat. Except when he yelled fire extinguisher. That was 2.5 years ago. And so we have this silence, and we gave up recorded music this year as an experiment. And so he took out the songbook on a break on in one evening, and he opened it up and he got out the guitar. And he's a musician, so this is difficult for me. And we started singing. And we just sing hymns, you know, like Mother Mary Comes to Me, Speaking words of wisdom. Imagine there's no countries, nothing to kill or die for, or amazing grace. And it opens the heart. And my teachers told me, but I've been too stubborn, and I have that kind of pride. If you just take a risk and learn something, just take a risk and open your heart, and happy. The last thing I'll share with you is another practice that Will and I share is a little notebook that we called 108 Gratitudes. And we just write a few things, like 1 through 5 or something. I'll write a few things I'm grateful for, and then when I don't see them for maybe... We do both. Usually 5 or 6 weeks, we'll do a solitary retreat, and then we'll join some practices. You know, there's lots of ways to stay close to somebody if you're not with them. And so every couple of weeks, we'll pass the book back and forth and just write a few things we're grateful for. And it's helped us because then we're grateful for what the other person is grateful for. And then the second aspect is the rejoicing. And I was, we were probably both in the category of people needing remedial rejoicing. So, in our own deeds. And so, we did some rejoicing list. And then, you know, we don't, sometimes the book goes away for months and months. But then it comes out and Will upped the ante and he wrote, "You must rejoice in yourself, only in yourself." And I was like, oh, you know. Because I'm like, you know, Connie secretly delivered me meals specially cooked for a Vata constitution. You know, and I mean, they're so beautiful. And he said, no. Mm-mm. You have to rejoice in yourself. And it really helped break that habit, you know, of not rejoicing in my own deeds. You know, I noticed in my Six Times book that I was doing my book. I was just sort of writing it down. My heart wasn't in it. You know, I wasn't really rejoicing the good things I did. And this sharing it with someone else in a written form, it helped. It really bled into, you know, to the daily practice. And, you know, I remember Geshe Michael came to see us and he said, you know, you can go back 12 years and rejoice if you want. You know, when you rejoice in the evening. I don't know if it was literal or figurative, but one day I was like, oh God, you know. I went back to kindergarten or first grade, and I thought, I remember we had to draw a picture of how you would escape your house in a fire. And it got a little award from the fire department. And probably everyone got the award. But I thought, I remember my dad was there. And he was probably like 30. And I thought, that must have been really uplifting. That must have been uplifting that day. I hope this story is true because I wouldn't want to lie in my rejoicing in my book. But you can. There's always something to be grateful for. always, and to rejoice in. So that helped. I'm sorry if I went too long. I'd like to just close with a prayer. I say it every night, and I didn't say it for probably about, I don't know, 30 years, 25 years. It's my childhood prayer. And now I say it every night. And I'd like to share it with you. I'm so nervous. I hope I don't forget. There's only one person here that I think is here. I'm not sure. That may know it. So just offer. Let's just offer the day. To the one person that you would like to. Thank you, dear God, for the beautiful day, for home and for care and for happy play. Thank you for rest when the day is done, and love that takes care of us, everyone. Thank you. Please, please come to a retreat. Please, you won't regret it. Thank you.